for a job well done. Thank you to counsel. We will proceed to case number five, please. Skywalker Communications of Indiana versus Skywalker Communications, Inc.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Doyle McLemore. I'm the attorney for Skywalker Communications of Indiana. This case comes to you as a private civil litigation which originated in the Northern District of Indiana, the Fort Wayne Division. Skywalker Indiana filed a complaint, an amended complaint based upon diversity jurisdiction against Skywalker Missouri. Seven different claims, including one sounding in tort or based upon Indiana statutes, were stated. Upon a motion of Skywalker Missouri, after the case had been litigated on the merits for approximately 2 years, the district court dismissed all of these claims under Rule 12b-6 based upon the authority of Indiana's statute of frauds. This appeal follows from that dismissal. There's one comprehensive contention which we're making and several basic issues. Skywalker Indiana contends that the complaint and amended complaint were improperly dismissed under Rule 12b-6 on the grounds that the statute of frauds barred all of its claims for relief. The relief that we're seeking from this court is that the dismissal be reversed and this case remanded to the district court for further proceedings. First, we believe the statute of frauds is satisfied here by the writings and memoranda that do exist and was therefore not a meritorious defense. The complaint and amended complaint have 19 specific supporting documentary exhibits attached to them, and at least four of these kinds of exhibits satisfy the requirements of the statute of frauds. The 1992 agreement between the Skywalker Corporations establishes that a written contract covering the same basic subject matter as the joint venture existed. This contract or this agreement provides the contractual backdrop to and the business foundation for the joint venture that later arose in this case.
How do we deal with the allegation in the complaint that the written contract was independent of the oral agreement and didn't control? Aren't those judicial admissions?
That clearly is the toughest issue because that allegation is contained in the complaint and the amended complaint. I did the best that I could to address that in the reply brief involving the inconsistency. The basic thing, I think, Your Honor, is that the pleadings are supposed to be construed so as to do substantial justice. And this court's review of the dismissal is de novo. And if you take a de novo look at all of the exhibits that are attached to the complaint and the language of the complaint itself, it becomes exceedingly difficult to simply disregard the 92 agreement because it was a contract between the parties and it did cement their business relationship.
Yes, but which party?
The 92 agreement? The 92 agreement is between Apollo Satellite Systems, Inc., which was the precursor of Skywalker Communications of Indiana and Skywalker Communications. Apollo Satellite Systems changed its name to Skywalker Communications of Indiana after the 92 agreement was executed. That was the sequence of events, Your Honor.
This is the agreement at tab 6 in your appendix?
Yes, sir. I believe that's correct. Second of all, two written contracts, each one between Skywalker Missouri and EchoStar Satellite Corporation, or Houston Tracker Systems, are alleged by the complaint and the amended complaint to be part of the joint venture between the Skywalker Corporations. Each of these contracts constitutes a writing for purposes of the statute of frauds and supports the factual inference that a joint venture existed.
What did you argue in the district court regarding the 1992 licensing agreement, regarding the agreement to establish the existence of a joint venture?
I was not counsel for...
Well, wasn't that waived at that time? It wasn't argued, was it? And if not, how can you argue it here?
Well, it's part of the complaint. The 92 agreement is attached to the complaint as an exhibit, and I believe that the law in this circuit is when you do that, that attachment becomes part of the pleading itself. I think there is even some law in this circuit.
Didn't your argument specifically say that you're not relying on the 1992 argument? Now you're coming up here and saying that you are? You're sort of turning the corner.
Well, yeah, I mean, the
you
complaint...
You admit you're doing it, don't you?
Well, I admit there's a potential inconsistency, and I attempted to argue that point around it in my reply brief. And that is, I think, as far as I can take the point.
Okay.
Now, let me say, if your questions are leading to the fact that you want to not consider the 92 agreement at all, I think the statute of frauds can still be satisfied. I mean, for example, if you look at the contracts between Houston Tracker and EchoStar, they established the 7-state territory that comprised the joint venture. Then if you later see the memorandum that was signed by the presidents of the Skywalker corporations, dated August 5, 1998, it divides up that territory. Now, my argument in the brief, which I would reiterate here, is that that memorandum of August 5, 1998 is enough to establish that there was a community of interests involved here and joint or mutual control, because they wouldn't divide up a 7-state territory unless that were so. So I think if your questions are leading in the direction that you're disinclined to consider the 92 agreement, I would suggest that I think there is enough evidence remaining, enough documents attached to the complaint to satisfy the statute of frauds. There were also memoranda and correspondence, which I've already discussed, the August 5, 98 memorandum, and there were business and accounting records that were attached to the complaint, which I believe helped to satisfy the statute of frauds. Skywalker Indiana asserts that all of these documents and writings, considered both individually and cumulatively, support the conclusion that the statute of frauds was not a meritorious defense to its claims, and that the district court committed reversible error by concluding otherwise. Assuming, however, that the statute of frauds is a meritorious defense, the law in Indiana is that equity will nonetheless prevent the statute from being used to perpetuate a fraud. Skywalker Indiana purchased at the outset of the joint venture some $1 million of EchoStar products and services, spent thousands of dollars on advertising, and built an extensive network of dealers to market the digital satellite television that was at the heart of the joint venture. Given these well-pleaded facts, to allow Skywalker Missouri to prevail on its defense of the statute of frauds would permit a fraud to be perpetuated on Skywalker Indiana in direct violation of the equitable principle, a result which we believe this court should prevent. Finally, all of Skywalker Indiana's claims were not properly dismissed based upon the authority of Indiana's statute of frauds. And just briefly, I see my time is expiring. Two of the claims that were stated sounded in tort, and two of them were statutory. And finally, there was a claim based on the doctrine of promissory estoppel. Promissory estoppel, we believe, is an exception to the statute of frauds in Indiana, and the tort and the statutory claims are not covered. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court. My name is Colleen Vetter, and I represent Skywalker from Missouri. It's obvious to me from your questions that you understand the statute of frauds issue. I would only like to address the August 5 memorandum where the territories were split. The parties had a relationship. They had a business relationship for a very long time. And in order to use that document to support any kind of agreement, they would have to show how that was different than the relationship they had from 1992 onward. To contrast the argument that was made today with the argument that was made before the district court, at tab 20 of the appellant's separate index, that is the response from plaintiff to reconsideration of the original motion to dismiss. And in that argument, the plaintiff consistently insisted that the oral joint venture agreement was separate and distinct from the 1992 written agreement. So, the district court said, fine, if you have a separate and distinct oral joint venture agreement, it violates the statute of frauds because it's to span a 5-year term, and thus it's not enforceable. Now, with that not being enforceable for this oral joint venture agreement, it can't enforce any of the other claims within the complaint. The complaint was properly dismissed in its entirety. And actually,
on this equitable argument, does that go to the state claims? What is your position as far as the other things being dismissed along with the statute of frauds?
Your Honor, equity is there to protect a party from being injured by unjust acts of the other party. I would say that based on the legal theory that was taken by the plaintiff counsel for over 2 years of litigation, the injury was done to themselves. They picked a representation of the facts. They said to the district court, this is what the relationship is. They said over and over again, ignore this 1992 written agreement, it doesn't apply. They chose their strategy and they stuck with it. Now on appeal, it would be, I consider it ludicrous for this appellate court to grant equity to the plaintiff now because appellate counsel has understood the mistake made below by trial counsel and is now saying, let's take another look at the facts, let's suggest that the facts actually tell a different story, and let's use a different theory. So equity really shouldn't...
I'm sorry. What about the theories they allege, though, that they claim shouldn't have been thrown out with the bathwater?
All of those other claims, a basic element of each one is defining the relationship between the parties. If you have an unenforceable agreement, you cannot use that unenforceable agreement to define a relationship on these secondary claims. What the court says, the law says, that would, what you're questioning then is the credibility of the agreement that's been found to be unenforceable. So you cannot use the unenforceable agreement or anything about it to establish an element showing, defining the relationship between the parties. And without that element, all of the claims fail. Quite honestly, if trial counsel had accepted that 1992 agreement as part of the definition of the relationship here and said, over time we modified it, they might have had a decent claim. It would have allowed them damages much smaller than what they were going for. They were looking for millions and millions. This is satellite equipment. It's big money. But because they chose to fight and fight and fight and say, forget that 1992 agreement, the district court finally said, fine, forget it, but then you lose. So in light of that, I consider this appeal to be ludicrous, asking you to consider a completely different set of facts and a completely different legal theory than what the district court made its decision based upon. And for that reason, if there are no other questions, I would simply like to request that you affirm the district court's judgment in its entirety.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
I just wanted to speak to the point about the breadth or the expansiveness of the dismissal, which includes the statutory claims and the tort claims. Indiana has no authority, to the best of my understanding, addressing whether the statute of frauds can be a defense to a tort or a statutory cause of action. However, I cite Corbin on contracts in my appellate brief. And Corbin, and I can provide this to you in a supplemental authority, clearly says that the statute of frauds is not a defense to tort claims and would not be, of course, to statutory claims as well. So in response to counsel's argument that the whole lawsuit was properly dismissed in its entirety, I would offer that as additional authority for the proposition that the dismissal went too far. I have no other comments to make, Your Honors. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to entertain them. Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you.